Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon. If you're in Eastern Standard Time, good afternoon. If you're in Greenwich Mean Time, good evening. Either way, welcome to Real Estate is Cool. I'm Brendan Cunningham, your host. As far as I know, we're going to give you a good show today. And we're going to talk about some things that may be familiar, maybe not be familiar, but one of the things I didn't want to talk about was interest rates. Okay, here's the deal. Their faces are practically getting red and their heads are about to explode talking about interest rates. It's the end of days and interest rates are going up. Interest rates have been going up and going down since time began. Okay, the challenge today is we have social media. So now, even people that aren't in the market for buying a house or aren't in the market for buying a car, typically ventures that involve interest, because usually you don't pay cash for those things, even people that aren't in the market for those things are being barraged by information about interest rates. They're talking about interest rates. Well, what are interest rates doing? And it doesn't really affect them. Oddly enough, some of the pundits that are out there are saying, oh my God, the sky is falling, interest rates and cost of housing, it's a critical condition, it's never been worse, it's this and this and this. And as people run with that information, it affects their behavior. And the odd thing out is, I did a little research here. And you've probably heard me say, and you've probably heard somebody say at some point, that interest rates are actually lower right now than they have been for the total average of all the years that they've been collecting information on this, the total average comes out to just under a tenth of a point under 8%. We're in the sixes and sevens at this point, so they're higher than the actual average. They're higher. They're lower than the actual average. But the pundits out there would have you believe that the sky is falling and no one can afford a house and it's a terrible thing. So I did a little research. Now, I want you to stick with me for a second here as I give you some of these numbers. Are you ready? The average percentage of income spent on housing varies depending on the income level of the household. According to the latest data, and this data I derived from a group called Self.Inc. According to the latest data, the average amount American households spend on housing per month is about $1,784 or 25.3%. Remember that number, 25.3%. There's a caveat. However, this percentage is higher for the lowest 20% of income consumer units who spend about 40.2% of their total expenditures. Mm-hmm. And lower for the highest 20% of income consumers in general who spend only about 29.9% on housing. So let's listen to some of these numbers. 25.3, 29.9, and in the absolute worst case scenario, it would be 40.2% are spending, that's what their people are spending on their total household expenses. Okay. 40 sounds bad. 25 sounds bad, I guess. You know what year was actually the worst year for affordability on houses? And you know, people say, well, you know, houses used to be cheaper. Yeah, but there's an affordability index. There's X dollars that you're bringing onto the table, and is what you can afford to do with that money. So we all get into this whole mystique about, you know, the current value of dollars and all that kind of stuff. All right, 51.8% was the average housing cost per American in 1981. 51.8%, as opposed to today, which is 25.3%, and in the absolute worst case scenario, 40.2%, which would be at the highest and worst case scenario of the numbers I gave, it's still 25% lower than the worst it's ever been. So with rates being higher than they were a year ago, they are, but prices are higher than they were a year ago too. So we have prices going up, we have interest rates going up, but there's still significant, they're literally almost more than half the worst year that we ever had in history, which was 1981. By the way, that was the year I started in real estate. I didn't realize just how bad it was. I bought my first house, let's see, I closed February of 80, and I didn't realize how bad the market was, and then I got into the real estate business, and I still didn't realize how bad it was because no one bothered to tell me because we didn't have social media. And you know what? Even at 18%, and they did go to 18% after I, you know, my rate, I got a 14.5, as I told you before. But even at 18%, I was selling a lot of houses. And the affordability index, I said, was 51.8% of all of your dollars went to pay for your housing, as opposed to right now in this terrible market that we're in, it's 25.3. So you see, every once in a while, you really need to do a reality check. And you know, it gets a little crazy out there with all these, you know, talk about interest rates. And I also often say the interest rates are like the weather. And as everyone talks, seems to talk about it, but no one seems to want to do a lot about it. And I can't do a lot about the interest rates either. And you know what? There's not a lot I can do about the laws of supply and demand, which really, truly, truly is the trump card for everything you need to know about economics. Just the way it is. And yes, we do have a very limited supply. So what I really want to talk about, I didn't want to talk about the interest rates, because, I mean, how much can you talk about the interest rates? They're good, they're bad. I mean, if you need to buy, you need to buy. That's what it is. And I really don't think that 80% of the market is going to stop buying real estate because of the interest rates. Because, as you've learned on this show, if you're a regular listener, 80% of the market never changes, never goes away because it's made up of people that, what we call the DDTs, death, divorce, and transfer. People are still going to die no matter what the interest rates are doing. It has nothing to do with it. People are still going to get divorced, no matter what the interest rate. People are, you know, we should stay together because the interest rates are really high right now. That's not a thing. And then finally, people are going to continue to get transferred. Now, when I say transferred, it could be from Williamsville to Orchard Park, or it could be from Williamsville to San Diego, whether it's across town or across the country or across the globe, for that matter. We have an extremely mobile society in the United States. It's one of the things that really made us the country that we are, is that people aren't afraid to move to another state. And we see that in spades these days. And they talk about the red states versus the blue states. People are moving to the red states, blue state, people are moving to the red state, and all that stuff. So people move around for a lot of reasons. And because they move around for a lot of reasons, whether the interest rates are high or low, it doesn't really come into play because they have to get rid of a house or they have to buy a house. Usually it's, I have to sell a house here and buy a house someplace else. I have a friend who recently bought here, and his company is sort of dancing around. They wanted to relocate to Philadelphia. And I said, you can do that. I said, but you better make damn sure that whatever they're going to give you in terms of a income bump or cost of living bump, it better make some sense, because I don't know that those numbers are going to work for you, because Philadelphia to here, that makes sense because you're going from high market to low. And here it doesn't make sense because you're going from low to high. You won't be able to afford to go there. And generally speaking, the income that they give you, unless they're doubling or tripling, it almost never makes sense. 10%, 15%, you can't make those numbers work. And a friend of mine moved from here, from Buffalo to Toronto, and oh my God, they gave him a big boost on the salary. The boost was negligible or non-existent by the time he got finished with it, because between the cost of living just being higher in Toronto, period, then there's the factor of the value of the currency. I was looking this morning. I said, you know, we should probably take a ride up to Niagara-on-the-Lake. I like going up there now that the borders are open. I said, but the dollar's trading at $1.32 right now from Americans to Canadians. So it's a pretty good deal for us. However, you know, sometimes people listen, sometimes they don't, and they do what they need to do. But this guy, he had to eventually leave Toronto. He couldn't afford to live there, even with the budget they gave him. But it all works out. Now he's in, where the hell is he now? Now he's in Los Angeles, I think, which is a market that's a lot more affordable than Toronto. I had to chuckle. I recently was on a plane, and I was talking to some people that were from London, in London, England, not London, Ontario, and they were visiting people in Toronto. And London, you know, I think London's a pretty expensive town, too. They talk about New York City being, I think London's even more expensive these days, if that's possible. And the people in London were amazed at how expensive housing was in Toronto. Toronto, it's expensive. It's high. But that's what it is. Okay, so let's talk about one of the things I did want to talk about, you know, we talk about what sellers need to do sometimes. Let's turn it around. Let's talk about what the buyers need to do out there to deal with the whatever the rising interest rates and more importantly the lack of inventory. It's very inventory is like so hard to find these days. And I'm not just talking about you know housing that you like. I'm talking about housing period anywhere. Housing you don't like. There's very few houses on the market. That being said, let me give you, oh, I don't know, a dozen or so things that are great rules of thumb for you if you want to set up a good strategy and you're a buyer of real estate today, 2023. Number one, always work with a broker. I actually was going to say, unless you are an experienced buyer who's especially savvy in the particular market where you're looking, even then, though, there's almost, I mean, it almost never makes sense to not work with a broker if, in fact, you're buying. For a couple of reasons. One, they're going to do all the legwork for you. Two, it's not going to cost you anything because the seller in almost all cases, and when I say almost all cases, it's like one case in probably 5,000 where it costs somebody something. But it's almost always the seller that pays the commissions and fees for a transaction, and it comes out of the transaction. It's part of the soup. You got to take it out. So always work with a broker. And they're going to do the work, the legwork for you. Doesn't cost you anything. Why would you do it yourself? Doesn't make any sense. Plus, you have somebody you can talk to that knows more than you do. The dumbest real estate agent probably knows more than you do just because they have their fingers on the pulse. They have access to information that you do not have and that you cannot get. And you have to go to an agent. Years ago, when the internet first came in, everyone said, "Oh my God, we're going to go like the dodo travel agent." The dodo became extinct, but the travel agent didn't. Except that what happened with the travel agent is you could get information on where you wanted to go on flights. I mean, I'm like most people, and I typically will make my own travel plans. But I'm a pretty good savvy traveler, not a vacationer, traveler. All of that being said, there are still some travel agents out there. And you know what? Working with a travel agent doesn't cost you any money either. But people have sort of fallen out of that. And part of the reason why is because the difference is with a travel agent, you don't need them to get the information. You can get the information. Now, with most of the information online, you as a consumer who are looking to buy a house, you can get a lot of information online through various websites, some of which are better than others. Zillow, I mean, I'm not a fan of Zillow, but you can still get information. It's flawed, but you can still get it. That's not why you really need an agent anymore. An agent can give you information too. It's just that agents are necessary pieces of the puzzle now because they can interpret the information because a lot of the information is either incorrect or just not accurate. A lot of inaccuracies. You know, it's the old joke about, well, I saw it on the internet. It's got to be true. No, we know that's nonsense. But what we need agents for today in the real estate world is not just to interpret the information, but more specifically to get you from contract to closing. That's when the work really begins. It's really making the transaction work. That part the internet can't handle right now. And I don't know that they ever will because there's lots of steps that human beings have to have involved with that. I know there's a whole thing about artificial intelligence right now. I can't go there. It's just too weird for me right now, and it doesn't serve the point of this question. Number two, always, 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 if you need a mortgage, use a mortgage broker. Now, there's mortgage brokers and there's mortgage bankers. Mortgage banker would be preferable over a mortgage broker, and here's the rule of thumb. Not all animals are dogs, but all dogs are animals. Not all mortgage brokers are mortgage bankers, but all mortgage bankers are mortgage brokers. What's the difference? A mortgage broker is kind of like a travel agency. They can go out and search the market and get you the best available rate from the best available lender that may have a product that's a little offbeat. They may have a mortgage product that's going to be portfolioed, so they have much broader lending discretion. A mortgage banker can do all of that, too. They can look around and place your mortgage with this guy or this guy or this bank or this bank, but they can also actually lend you the money directly. Example, M&T is a mortgage banker. They're a bank. They got branches on the corners. But you could go into M&T, and if if they really wanted to, they could conceivably, they could get you a mortgage that Evans Bank has, and they could broker it through Evans. The mortgage broker could do the same thing. He could broker it through Evans. I'm just picking them out of my head. This is nothing to do with preference. The difference is the mortgage broker can actually lend you the money, whereas the mortgage M&T, they can actually lend in money. They can reach into their little stocking and come up with the money, and then it's an M&T loan. So, and why is this important? Because this is why. You're going to save time, and you're going to save money, and you're going to save a wagon load of aggravation. Why? Because let's say you go to M&T. M&T is a good bank. I'm not saying they're not. But M&T has their product line that they want to sell. They want to do this mortgage. They want to do this mortgage. They want to do this mortgage. And these are the rates that they're charging. And I'm sure they're all good and they're all fair. That's fine. But what happens if you apply at M&T and for some reason or another you don't get approved? Well, now you got to go to Evans or one of the other banks. You go to Evans, you have to start the process all over again. All over again. The package that they sometimes call the mortgage process. You fill out a whole application, all this. Each bank has their own one. If you go to a mortgage bank or a mortgage broker, you do the application once. They take that entire package and they shop the market with it. So you only have to do it once. And, as I said, they shop the entire market. If I'm looking to fly out of Buffalo, I guess the number one carrier out of Buffalo is probably Southwest. But Southwest doesn't always go where I want to go. I mean, if I want to go to Vegas, they're great, but I don't particularly want to go to Vegas today. If I want to go to France, well, I'm going to have to go on a different carrier, and I'm probably going to have to connect, because Air France doesn't land in Buffalo. I'm going to probably have to connect in Newark or whatever on a plane that's going out here from United or something like that. So understand the difference between mortgage broker and mortgage bank, always rather than just going directly to the bank. Even if you have a preferential account with the bank, it's still better to go with a mortgage broker, mortgage banker. Number three. All right, this is huge. If your attorney isn't a real estate attorney, I hope they're not going to get mad at me for saying this, get a different attorney. If you're doing real estate attorney is crucial, especially if they're local. A good local real estate attorney, I always say that, good local, you can have the best real estate attorney on Long Island, but when he comes up here, the nomenclature is a little different. He's going to miss a step here or there. He just is. It's just the way it works because he's not totally familiar with the environment. A good local real estate attorney can save you time, save you money because they know how to talk to people and they just know how to move the transaction along. And as I've often said, since my daughter is an attorney, she's a litigator, she never, ever, ever wants to handle a real estate transaction. Ever. She doesn't like it, you know? So she has real estate attorneys in her firm and they do it. And that's fine. Because the real estate attorneys, they may want to litigate it, and they may want to bring her in to do the litigation. That's how it works. There's specialties within specialties. Real estate agents have specialties within specialties, too. And that may be a factor for you, too. Like, example, if you're you're looking for senior citizen housing, your agent, who you have, can probably find a lot more readily than you can. Number four, use a home inspector. If you're making a purchase, if you don't trust your own eyes and your own product knowledge, then you should probably have a home inspector help you with that decision. Okay? I'm not going to say not to do that. But I will say, if you don't need one, why would you spend the money? And remember, if the house is in really, really good condition just by looking at it the naked eye, what would be the trigger that says, I don't want to buy this house? And that's really why you want to do the home inspection. Because they're always going to find some sort of Mickey Mouse items along the way. But if you look at the house and you weren't aware that there was a major crack in the foundation, and, well, let's say there was a crack in the foundation, and it was $5,000 to fix, okay? Would you not buy the house for $5,000? You might not. But if it's a house that's $500,000 or $600,000, well, what is $5,000 in relation to that whole thing? It's nothing. Even with the home inspection, you probably – you know, once you learn that, you'd probably say, yeah, okay, fine. Now I know what my deferred maintenance is going to be down the road. So if you need an inspection, get one. But if you don't need one, use some sense on that. Okay, number five, this is a simple one. Buy what you can afford. You know what? People will say, well, I'm going to wait till I can move into the neighborhood. Well, you know, you're going to wait 5 years, 10 years, and guess what's happening in the 5 years, 10 years? Even if the interest rates stay the same, the prices never seem to stay the same. They always seem to go up. Now, if you look at the graph, it may not be a straight line going up. It may be up, then a slight dip down. It may be up, then a slight dip down. There's always a little slight dip down sort of any given week or any given month, but the general trend has always been up, always. You know, even within the Great Depression, when prices may have fallen, after the Depression was out, they just continued to go up, and they were higher after the Depression than they were before the Depression. So buy what you can afford. Don't wait. Don't hold out looking for the perfect deal. A lot of people, I'm waiting for the perfect deal. That's great. You wait for the perfect deal. It doesn't exist. And by the way, if such a thing did exist, do you know what would happen? The agent would buy it. He wouldn't even tell you about it. He'd say, hey, you know, a nice phone, all, but I was here first, finders keepers, losers weepers. It's just the way it is. I mean, I don't know if that's right or ethical. But, oh, no, I know it's not. It's not a cool thing to do, obviously. And this is about cool things, not uncool things. So, yeah, so if you're looking for the perfect house, just don't do it. I mean, find a good transaction, a transaction that you can live with. Good, very good is wonderful. Perfect doesn't exist. Number seven, this is, you know, some of this is fine. That's why the stars and stripes continue to fly out there. If you want a single-family house, buy a single-family house. Don't buy a double or a triple, and then make it into that. You can do it. It's just always the more expensive way to go. There's no cheap way to do that. So you're going to be spending money to reposition or reconfigure something that it's just not a good business move. Same thing is true on the flip side. If you want a double, buy it. Don't get a single. First of all, you got legal issues, and then you have construction issues and code issues. Generally speaking, you're not – in terms of code issues, you may run into some code issues. When you're going from one to two family, it's not as difficult, oddly enough, as going from two to one. Because when you go from one to two or three, you're actually increasing the numbers of housing units. And that's a big deal right now because there's not enough housing units. So chances are if you want to go down, you'd have more trouble than going up. So you can avoid that whole thing just by buying what you're supposed to buy. You want a single, buy a single. You want a double, buy a double. You want a triple, buy a triple. Okay, here's one that's very sophisticated. Not everyone can take advantage of this, but if you can, you should. Number eight, try to do a 15-year mortgage as opposed to a 30. Let's look at the numbers. If you finance the term for half the time, which would be 15 years, well, does that mean that your payment doubles? And the answer is no, it doesn't. Your payment on the average goes up about 18%. Now, you may not be able to afford 18% more, because let's throw some real numbers in it. That would mean my $1,000 payment at 18% higher goes to, $180 more? So almost 200 bucks more, if you can do that. You know, if you can afford the extra thing, because you're paying your mortgage up that much faster and you're saving. I mean, you do the math on it, it's staggering. But not everyone can. But if you can, you should. But here's a better rule of thumb for you, too, and in addition to a rule of thumb. A lot of the contracts, especially the contracts in Erie County, are set up. They'll say, and the buyer is applying for it. This is subject to the buyer by getting approved for a mortgage. And then you fill in the blank that says 30 years or 15 years at a rate not to exceed. If you put it on the contract, let's say you know that the guy wants to go for a 15-year mortgage. You know that he does. If you put 15 and then all of a sudden he gets in there and the underwriter looks at him and says, well, you really can't afford this. He says, but you can afford to do it at 30. If you do it that way, you have to get an addendum and you have to ask permission from the seller to do that. He may say, no, these are the terms that you agreed to. These are the terms that I expect. If you do a 30 on the contract, you can always go down. You don't have to get an addendum. Why? Because they say, well, if we know you can afford this, but you're willing to do that, well, then that's fine, too. But, yeah, if you can do 15, that's a better deal. All right, now, number nine. If you have little or no money to buy a house, don't let that dissuade you from getting into the market. Talk to your broker. Talk to your mortgage banker. There's so many programs out there for first-time buyers that let you get in for as little as $500 down, sometimes even less than that. VA programs, you get in for less than nothing. So, I mean, literally less than nothing. Zero down, and sometimes you walk away with a check. There's all kinds of crazy deals out there. And one of the things I like to tell newer agents coming into the business is that here's the number one reason why people should get into the business, and in some cases, they're not even aware of it. Legal insider trading is legal in the real estate business. You just have to disclose it. I want to buy a house. I need a house. I can't buy a house. Sure, you can. I just say, oh, and by the way, I'm also a real estate agent. I can't lie, cheat, or do any of those things. So when I disclose, I can buy a house. And the thing about me buying a house is when I look in the multiple listing service, I get pick of the litter first because I have access to the information before you do. So I have access to the information, and I mean, if I need a house, I'm going to buy a house. But I also have access to the information that the bankers are giving, all these crazy deals that are out there. You may be able to take advantage of some of these crazy deals that are out there. And believe it or not, and I told this story several times, when I first bought my first house, the interest rate was 14.5%, it was a nightmare. I went in to rent an apartment. I didn't go in to buy a house. And thank God for my real estate agent. She sat me down and says, listen, Sonny, she said, let me show you how this works. You should buy a house. I said, I don't have any money. She says, sit down. Let me show you how this is done. And I bought a 3-family house. Number 10, remember, the first house you buy is most likely not going to be the last house you buy. So if you're thinking it's going to be your dream house, it's not. It's not. I mean, I guess you could win the lottery and maybe it is, but chances are it's probably not going to be. So buy a house, build some equity, refinance, buy another house, do it again, then maybe the second or third time around, you can get your dream house. And of course, don't get what they call buyer's remorse. I always warn people, I say, listen, this is what's going to happen. Now that your contract's been sent and conveyed and accepted, I guarantee you probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, one of you is going to wake up screaming and say, oh my God, what have we done? Everybody gets buyer's remorse. Everybody. No one is immune to this. You second guess yourself. Understand if you made a good and responsible decision to buy the house in the first place and you consulted with the right people in the first place, then why would it be wrong at 3 o'clock in the morning? Stop it. You know, just behave yourself. Get up. Have a glass of warm milk, something like that, a cup of warm milk. So those are some of the things you might want to look at if you're looking to buy. And some of it's common sense, some of it's not. And it's always a good time to buy a house. I very rarely can I come up with this. Well, it's not a good time to buy. It's not a good time to buy, I guess, if you don't have any money. But you know what? You don't know that that's the reason why you're not buying a house if you haven't spoken to your bankers, because they can show you all the other alternatives that are out there. There's a program that Neighborhood Assistant, NACA, Neighborhood Assistant Corporation of America, wonderful program. A lot of times people buy, they don't just think that they can't buy a house because their credit's terrible. I mean, really terrible. With the NACA program, you can buy a house with awful credit. You can buy with the credit in the 500s. It's insane. But you have to use their program. You got to go and you got to jump through a few hoops. But what do you want to do? You want to cry about how you can't get out of your own way? Or you want to look at some alternatives to maybe get you into that house this year, 23. Let me tell you, if you get into a house in 23, you're going to be a lot happier than the person that didn't in 24 or 25, because those people, the parade may have passed them by, and even if it didn't pass them by, they're going to pay a lot more money for it, a lot more. And, as I used to like to remind people, there's two times to plant a tree, like much like real estate. Today and 20 years ago. And if you're going to wait 20 years to do something, it's not a thing. The whole point of the movie It's a Wonderful Life with the savings and loan with Jimmy Stewart was, you know, you want to begrudge a person a couple of bedrooms and a bath and a fireplace and have him wait 20 years for it, because that's what Mr. Potter did. He wanted that to happen. He says, no, he says they should have it now. And they should be able to pay for it. So that's our show for today. If you're thinking remotely about becoming a buyer and you're not sure if you can do it, talk to your real estate agent, talk to a real estate agent, talk to a banker, talk to the mortgage broker. And first person, probably the agent, because he can connect you with those other things. I'm Brendan Cunningham. This is Real Estate is Cool, as far as I know. Tune in next week, and we will see you then.